All right, I think we'll go ahead and get started. Looks like most folks have made it in. All right, so welcome to DBI 302, Building Stylish Power View Reports, or as I would like to say, Building Stylish and Effective Power View Reports. So we're going to look at a lot of the functionality in the product and how you can create a great interactive and great looking reports in this session. So just a little bit of house cleaning items here. If you have questions during the session, I would appreciate if you could either send them to my email, that's my Microsoft email address, or you can send them to Twitter. Lastly, if you don't have one of those two vehicles available, you can text me, that's my cell phone number. I do not have the all unlimited super text everybody plan, so use it a little bit judiciously. And also, if we have time, I'll take questions in the room as well. So I'll be monitoring this throughout the session. I'll answer them at the end, but there's an avenue there for us to get questions. So in terms of objectives, we're going to talk about PowerView. We're going to go as deep as we possibly can into all of the functionality that's there. I want to make sure that when you leave this session today, you know all of the capability that's in the product and how you can use it, and also a lot of the reasons behind why the product is built the way that it is. And then the last part, we're going to pull back some of the magic. So you've seen a lot of demos this week, I think, about PowerView where things are very easy to do. The experience is very interactive, and a lot of that is due to the functionality that exists with the BI semantic model and Power Pivot, and we're going to take a look at that. Now, just for so I can kind of gauge how deep to go there, how many of you were in the sessions that Casper had, I believe it was yesterday, building the perfect BI semantic model for PowerView? Okay, so quite a few. I'm not going to go super deep there, but I'm going to cover some of the main capabilities that you'll want, just so that everybody has that. And then the presentation, as I said, is sort of broken into two parts. The first part is we're going to dive deep into PowerView and look at the capability that's there. And then in the second part, like I said, we'll pull back some of the magic that's there. All right. So when we look at SQL Server 2012, and the investments that we're making for reporting services, a lot of it is around this concept of managed self-service BI. And that really boils down to helping information workers do the things that they need to do. Let's empower them to get things done, but also do it in such a way that we can monitor it, we can make sure that they have the data sources that they need. They might put that together with other data sources that they have access to, but it's the whole idea of empowering users, but while at the same time managing what they've got. So in terms of pillars for the reporting services product, number one, PowerView, which is a highly interactive visual query tool. The second piece is around proactive intelligence and end-user alerting. And if you were in Mukesh's session yesterday, you saw demos around that area. And then lastly, increasing efficiency. So we've done a ton of work in the reporting services team to make SharePoint enabled as a shared service. It's just built right in, and it works. But we're going to focus on the first one, which is empowering end users. So what is PowerView? PowerView is an interactive data visualization and query experience. It runs in the browser, and it runs across multiple platforms. You can see it runs IE, it runs Firefox, it'll run Safari, it runs on Windows, and it runs inside the browser, and it runs inside SharePoint. And it's designed for you to be able to easily build these reports with very few clicks and then get them to presentation if you'd like to, right? So some key points. Number one, we have a highly visual design experience inside PowerView. It's going to seem very familiar to people who are used to working with Office. There's a ribbon. I'll go through and show everything about how it's laid out. And it's very interactive. It's web-based. and it's very flexible. What you'll find as you start to use, the product is that you can just start bringing in fields, removing fields, looking at different data shapes, if you will, and you don't really have to necessarily worry about what's going to happen. You can just, you're just free to explore the data. And if you do want to change something, you don't have to do a very destructive operation like delete the report item and start all over. And even if you do, it's so quick to get started again that it's not really that big of a deal. The second key pillar with the product is that there's a lot of rich metadata interactivity. And what that means is that because we're based on the Power Pivot and the BI semantic model, we're able to introduce a lot of behaviors in the product, such as the highlighting and filtering capabilities, that just work. They don't require the user who's actually using PowerView to manage any settings or use any property pages. It all just works out of the box. And lastly, we're focused a lot on making it presentation ready at all times. So what that means is you can export your PowerView reports out to PowerPoint with full interactivity, and you can also share them inside SharePoint and have users collaborate there, right in the Power Pivot gallery or anywhere else in SharePoint for that matter. Now, when we started to build the PowerView product, we had a very clear set of design principles that we wanted to work with. And a lot of this is based on how information workers work today, right? They bring a lot of different devices into the workplace. They're used to, they want things that just sort of work, right? If they have to read a help manual, they're not going to do that, right? If they have a question about how to use a product, they're going to go to the internet, they're going to search, and they're going to probably find a blog that gets them the answer that they want. But they also have a very low tolerance for having to figure these things out. They just want products that work. And so a lot of what we've done in PowerView is sort of remove the complexity, make it very simple for the user, and in fact, that actually makes it very hard for us as a development team. We actually have to do a lot of work to make all of these capabilities kind of work together in a way that makes sense for them so that they don't necessarily have to go out and search for how to do something. It's also very highly performing and efficient. We've done a lot of work to virtualize data as the user's interacting with it. So we're obviously not going to bring down 100 million records into the browser at once and, you know, watch the browser consume a lot of memory, right? So we actually window the data so that you're able to logically work with that type of data, but you're not actually bringing all of it down at once. Everything happens on the canvas with the data. So you're not designing reports with field names and sort of obscure, you know, maybe when I'll see what this looks like when it runs. You're actually working with data and you're able to interact with it. The moment you drop something onto the canvas, you get data, right? And that is really important as you're trying to answer questions and you're trying to understand trends in your data. You want to see the data as you're working with the product. One last point, two clicks to return on investment. This basically means anywhere in the product, we tried to make it such that anything you had to do, you could do it within two clicks or less, right? That's actually really hard, and in many places where we couldn't do that originally, we went back and just kept working at it and working at it and working at it until we got to a point where you actually could do something in two clicks or less. The other thing that you'll notice as a result is there are zero property pages inside of PowerView. We have a ribbon, we have a field list, we have a model explorer, if you will, and that is it. Right? There is no property pages for you to configure things. It's streamlined and optimized for interacting with your data. Now, there are a lot of features in the product. I'm not going to list these all off. These are just here for you to take back as you remember the presentation. But I think the easiest way to sort of look at these features is to jump into a demo. So that's what I'm going to do. All right. I need to move over to two. All right, so let's get started. Hold on just a moment here. I wanted to set this up real quick. All right, so in terms of data, What we're going to look at here today is a program that the U.S. That we had here in the U.S. a couple years ago. It was called the Cash Allowance Rebate System. And everywhere you sort of went, if you were out looking for cars, this is sort of what they, how they positioned it. It was called Cash for Clunkers. Do people here in the U.S. remember this program? You people? All right. So sort of the way it worked is you dump your car into something like that, right? Your old car that doesn't have good gas mileage or is old. And then the government actually gives you a check, and then you get to buy a new car, right? So it's an interesting problem set from a data perspective because it has a market basket analysis type of scenario built in, right? You trade in a car, you buy a car, and at the same time, you also want to be able to do analysis at the car make level. And so I'm going to show you how I built some of that in Power Pivot, but it's all based on effectively, that last part is based on calculations with DAX. When we get to that point, when we get to the second part of the presentation, I'll show you how that works. So this is just some more information about the program. Again, it ran for about, I think, 2 months, and it did about $3 billion in business for the auto industry, for the government. So with that, I'll go ahead and switch back over to give you an idea of what we're working with here. All right, so here we are inside of SharePoint, inside the Power Pivot Gallery. And to get started with PowerView, there's a couple different ways you can do it. One way is to come right over here, and on your Power Pivot workbook, there's an ability to create a PowerView report right up there in the right-hand corner. That's one way to do it. We're not going to start that way. Another way to do it is to actually create a report data source definition here inside of SharePoint Document Library, and you can launch PowerView from there. Now, I already have it up and running, so I'm going to go ahead and switch over to it. Right? And we're going to spend a few minutes here and just get acquainted with what is in the product the first time you open it up. I'm going to go to F11 to get full screen. All right, there we go. So up here at the top, All right, we have the ribbon, right? So when we talk about PowerView being familiar, this is what we're talking about. Information workers are used to seeing the ribbon with Office. We've brought the ribbon into PowerView so that they can have a familiar environment. Another thing that is fairly familiar is the Model Explorer over here on the right. And this is very similar to what you would have in Excel, for example, if you were building a pivot table, right? So these are all of the entities and all of the details I have about my data. You can see that I have two main tables here. One is transactions. This is every single transaction that occurred as part of the program. It includes both what they traded in and then what they got in return, what the user got in return. And then make, this was the table I was telling you about before, this is sort of where I break apart that relationship that exists in the transaction table and allows me to do statistics like what percent were traded in for a particular brand, what percent were bought, right? So it sort of breaks apart that relationship that's there in the fact table. All right, so let's get started. So the first thing that I did here when I looked at this data is I wanted to see just, you know, how many invoices there are. Now that's a little bit small. I'm going to crank up, I'm going to switch it to a different visual here so that you can see it a little bit better. This is called a card visualization. I'll just go ahead and zoom in a little bit more so you can see it. So there's about 678,000 records that we're working with here. All right. I'm going to switch that back to a table. Now notice how quick that was. I just went from another view, which we'll show you, I'll spend a little more time on a little bit later, back to a table. It was just one click away. Right, so up here in the visualization gallery, you have one-click access to all of the different visuals that you can create. It's very quickly to switch between these. All right, so I have an invoice count, and I want to look at this by day of week. So I'm going to go to date. I'm going to go day of week. There we go. Oh, sorry, weekday name is what I wanted, actually. All right. And you'll notice the first thing here, I'm going to turn this into a chart. Just went to the ribbon there, clicked on chart. Very easy to do. And there's a couple things here. We'll talk about a little bit later. You'll notice that the date, the days of the week are all ordered correctly, right? By default, the user didn't have to, you know, figure out whether, you know, oh, my weekday names came across alphabetical. It just puts them in the right order, right? And you'll also notice that I have some blanks down here at the bottom, and I want to get rid of those. So I'm going to go ahead and do that really quick. And to do that, I'm going to use the filter pane. There we go. I'm going to go to the chart. You'll notice that there's two scopes to the filters. One is at the view level, which will filter everything that I have on this page. Now, at this point, all I have is a chart, so that's what's going to happen if I were to work with that. And then I have filters that I could apply at the chart level. So I want to get rid of those blanks, so I'm just going to drop this down really quick and get rid of the blanks. Now, right here, we have effectively our first insight. This data, when I looked at it for the first time, was very interesting to me because I assumed that when people go to buy cars, they buy cars on Saturday and Sunday, right? Those are the days that they're not working. Those are the days that they have a chance to go out and actually, you know, buy a vehicle. I grew up in California, and I remember Sunday papers as a kid that were like this thick. Right? They're huge. I could barely get my hands around them. And inside those Sunday papers were effectively ads from dealerships, right? And so that's what you do if you had to go buy a car. You would go out on the weekend and, you know, maybe spend Saturday doing the test drive and then Sunday going and buying the car. But for some reason, it turns out that Sunday's actually the lowest number. And so I actually thought this data was wrong the first time that I saw this. I said, oh, I've done something wrong. I probably coded the data with Sunday being a 1 instead of 2 or something like that. I was off by 1. But no, it actually turns out that you can't buy a car in like 13 U.S. states on a Sunday. The dealerships are closed. And it's law that goes way back. It just hasn't, a lot of the different states have not sort of changed that. But every state that I've lived in has always been, you know, you go buy a car on Sunday. So I didn't know if that was the case at the time. So I was interested in cutting the data different ways. So I wanted to look at this by state. So I'm going to give this report a title really quick. We're going to call it Every Day is Not Like Sunday. There we go. And you'll notice that I can take this title here and align it over here. I can also, this is a rich text box that you have at the top. You can also insert those into the report anywhere you would like to do so. So I just have a very simple title that I'm going to add right there. But if I want to break this out by state, what I'm going to do next is I'm going to drag this to vertical multiples. And you'll notice something right away, right? The first thing you'll notice is, oh, some of the states sold a lot of cars and some of the states didn't sell a lot of cars. And that's what this is really designed to do. This look is designed to get you to start to notice the differences and your eyes will just automatically do it. That's how we're wired. A couple of nice capabilities here. Number one is I can sort this entire, I can sort all of these charts based on the subtotal. So I'll just do state name descending. And then I'll switch it to invoice count descending. And to do that sorting, all I had to do, right, is go right here above the visual, click once, and it was done. Right? I didn't have to open a property page, specify which field that I want. I just click right on the canvas, and stuff happens. Right? And you'll notice right away the difference. Look at California and Texas. Now, I don't know if there's some backdoor deals that happen on Sunday in Texas or how that gets recorded, but I'm going to guess that you can't buy a car in Texas on Sunday. But look at California. I mean, California has a lot of deals that are done on Sunday, right? And I can filter, you know, I can scroll down this set of multiples here, and I can get a pretty good idea of which states actually have dealerships that are either open or not open on Sunday. It's very easy to do, right? So that's one view of the data. Now, to create another view, all I have to do is pop out that little area that I had over there on the left and say new view. And I have a couple of different options available. I can either create a new one or I can duplicate the existing one, right? In this case, we're going to create a new one. All right? And I'll collapse the filters area. Now, I wanted to get an idea of how effective this program was, right? So I have information here about the number of cylinders, the types of cars, the makes of cars that were being used, and I wanted to find out how effective this program was, and I wanted to look at it in a bunch of different ways. So what I did, what I can do, is I can just start working with this data. So let's look again at the count of invoices. And let's look at this by new vehicle cylinder. Let's start with trade-in cylinders. Okay. All right, and I'm going to turn this into a column chart. Now, there's a couple of outliers here. I'm going to get rid of the blanks and the ones that weren't entered in very well, apparently. So all of this data, by the way, it was put up on a website. You can actually go and download it as an Access database, and that's just what I did. I downloaded it, and I imported into PowerPivot, and then I was able to work with it from there. But the data was not perfectly clean, to say the least. So these are the trade-in vehicles. And then we're going to look at the what they bought. New vehicle make. And new vehicle cylinders. Oh, sorry. New vehicle cylinders and transaction invoice count. There we go. All right. I'll turn this into a column chart as well. Collapse down the view. I don't need that. Click there. Go to the filter pane again and remove the blanks. All right. So one of the things that we're going to look at here now is how interactive these visuals are by default once you put them on the canvas. And there's a lot of smart highlighting and filtering capabilities that we have. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to click, for example, on, you'll notice that there weren't a lot of four-cylinder vehicles that were traded in. You know, whether they weren't that popular in the market over time or whether they didn't actually qualify for the program because they actually had, you had to have a vehicle with low miles per gallon. And that class of vehicles probably has higher miles per gallon. But you'll notice if I click on people who traded in six-cylinder vehicles, you can see what happens, right? They migrated down to a big chunk of the four-cylinder vehicles. They also bought, they also preferred six-cylinder vehicles. And I didn't have to do anything to set that up. It just works out of the gate. Now, if I move up to the eight cylinders, you'll notice that the eight cylinder folks, they like their eight cylinders, right? So they stayed as close to eight cylinders as they possibly could in many cases. Now, let's add another variable to this. Let's look at the type of car that they bought. All right, so I'm going to look at trade-in type. Notice I'll just click on it, right? And it adds it to the visualization in the place that makes the most sense, right? So I didn't actually even have to work with the field well at the bottom to put it in the right place. It just put it on series. That's naturally the right place for it to go. And if I want to look at people who bought passenger cars, again, all of that interactivity just works, right? It highlights the partial amount in the visualization below, as well as the visualization that it's a part of. All right. And I can do the same thing on this visual here. I can add new vehicle type. And The way I'm going to add this one is I'm going to drag it out to the visual itself. So this is another way that you can get data onto the canvas, right? And you'll see again, it just automatically updates and does the highlighting, right? I don't have to set up any properties to make that work. If I click on this visual here, I can see the contributions of the passenger cars across the versus the trade-ins versus the new ones. And it's all very interactive, and it just works, right? I didn't have to set anything up. It's just one click away. So that's another view of the data. Now, let's get some information about the actual manufacturers on here. So I'm going to create a little bit of room, right? And I want to get some information about the actual manufacturers. So let's look at the trade-in vehicles. Trade-in make. We're going to grab the make of the trade-in. We're going to look at the trade-in make. We have images right there for that. And then I'm going to look at the total amount, so the trade-in amount, trade-in invoice count. All right. I'm going to go ahead and sort this. It's just a table that I have over here on the left that has all of the data in it. And then what I can do is I can actually turn this into a different visual that we have. I'm going to turn this into a card. You'll see why we call it a card in just a moment here. All right. Go ahead and squeeze these down a little bit more. A little bit more room for the card. There we go. All right. Now, what I can do is I can actually sort this card by the number of invoices. It's already actually sorted by that, right? So what you're looking at here are the actual number of trade-ins by the actual manufacturer, right? So you'll notice that as I start to click on these visuals, they update. And the cards update, right? So it's a way that I can sort of draw attention to some of the underlying data just by creating these cards and working down the visual. Same thing with the category three. You know, if I click on a visual here, you know, I can see in terms of the new vehicle types. Again, if you bought a truck, you more than likely, you know, you traded in a Ford or a Chevy or a GM vehicle. So again, all of that was very simple to do. I just drug the fields out, I changed the visualization type, and all of the interactivity that was already there just continued to work, and it worked with the new visualizations that I brought into the view as well. Now, in terms of filters, I want to take a couple minutes and show you some of the filtering options that we have here. So right now, I have a couple of different styles here. One is the invoice count, which, since it's a measure, we give it a slider type of filter, so you can just slide that back and forth and change the range, right? If I just want to look at the vehicles that had a larger number, in this case there weren't that as many as it filtered everything out. So we'll go to the table. Sorry, go to the chart. Could filter that out a little bit. Move this one down. There we go. There we go. So if there were more than 37,000 trade-ins, those vehicles either had 6 or 8 cylinders. Again, I can go ahead and click on that, and you can see how the visuals interact. Now, the other type of filter that we have is a date filter. So I can drag the date on here, and I can go to the back of the card, as we call it, and I can either enter in the date, you know, greater than 7/1/2009, like this, and that'll work. But the other option we have is we have a nice little calendar control right here, and you can navigate the months and the years just by clicking on those headers and then getting to the value that you're interested in. So I'll go ahead and collapse that down, apply the filter. The data is not going to change in this case since it's all after this program ran during July, from July and August. All right. So that, I hope, shows you some of the type of interactivity that we have here on the canvas, right? Every visual that you put on the screen is just by default interactive. All right, so that's one view. Now I'm going to create another view that sort of looks at who were the big winners and who were the, you know, not so fortunate in terms of what was bought and what was traded in. Now, in some respects, this is it's kind of interesting because, you know, up until very recently, right, the emergence of the Japanese automakers in the U.S. market, so there's probably not as many of those going way back to, you know, like the 70s and 80s when people would trade in. People were trading in a lot of those types of vehicles. What I'm going to do is I'm going to create a scatter chart that sort of shows that. So I'm going to start with the make, and I'm going to add, we'll take a look at this as the running total net change, all right, and we'll look at the total number of new vehicles. Now, this is coming out of the table that where I just have broken apart that relationship in the invoices, right? So I'm able to do analysis at the actual manufacturer level, and I'll show you how that worked when we get to the second half of the presentation. Now, all I did was just click on those fields, and if I want to create a scatter chart, I just come right up here, right? And there you have it, right? And actually, I'm going to flip these. Just a second here, we'll do count of new vehicles, and then we'll do running total change. I want that one on the y-axis, okay? All right? And so now you can kind of look, if you look out here, you'll see, oh, Toyota, they actually ended up with a net change of 120,000 vehicles in the market. And then you look at some of the other brands, for example, Ford, they still had a lot of new vehicles that came into the market, but they had a lot more that were traded in. They actually were the number two manufacturer in the data in terms of people who bought vehicles, but just the net change was negative. And then let's say I wanted to kind of play this over time. All I have to do is click on this date of sale. And you'll notice, the first thing it does is it restricts the data because now I've got so much data in the scatter plot here that it's letting me know that it's got a sample. So I'm going to filter this down a little bit. I'll change the date of sale because there's some data in here that's doesn't get going until the end of the period. So I'll change this to 7/15/2009, hit apply filter. All right, there we go. Okay. Now let's look what happens when I play this over time. You'll see that there's sort of a slow start to the program, and then it sort of jumps out. Hold on here. And then you can kind of see what's going on there is the different days of the week. The scatter chart is sort of fluctuating based on more than likely, you know, bumping into Sunday when it actually has those dealerships that are not open. So let's do a couple of other things here. Let's add the benefit to the program ratio to the size. Now, this is just a calculation that I came up with that basically is it does the division between how many new cars there were versus how many old cars there were. And so the bigger the number, the more people move towards that brand as part of that manufacturer, as part of the program. All right, so I actually want to put the running total net change here. Let's see, there we go. And now when we play this over time, right, we'll see how these fared. I'll go ahead and stop it. right? And you can kind of see how this sort of fluctuates by day, and you can also see that, for example, as these things are moving through time, Toyota's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger up in terms of the running total of both the new vehicles and that net change. But for example, if you look at Jeep, you have a very different picture. It just increasingly actually gets worse, right, as we go through time, right? And so I was actually interested in finding out what was going on here. And it turns out that this was the time period where they had the restructuring for Chrysler and for Jeep. And so you can actually see in here there's a significant point of drop-off where there's not, where they, I think they were in the process of closing some dealerships. And so you'll see a lot of the, it's basically just starts to drop off. That basically there are no more Jeeps being bought, but there is still a lot being traded in, right? And so you have these very different patterns that you're just able to see very quickly just by working with the data. All right, very different trends. And again, notice that I didn't really have to spend too much time over here in the field well, right? If I click on a date, it just automatically adds to the play axis. If I click on a measure, it puts it in the next available space where you can place a measure, whether it's the x-axis, the y-axis, or size. And so again, it's just designed to be very fluid. Now, I'm going to bring back the card again. I want to show you what you can do with some of these visuals that will sort of help with the information hierarchy that we have here. Let me give you an example of that. So I'm going to put Toyota out here again, and I'm going to grab the make image. Yeah. Oh, hold on, where did it go? Let me undo that real quick. There we go. I'm going to put the make image out here, and I could put, you know, the change of cars, the count of new vehicles, the count of trade-ins. I'm going to turn that into one of those big cards we call a call-out card right here. So we have two styles for the cards. One is the one you see here, which is the standard one, and then the second is this call-out card, right? So I can do that. And then what I'll do is move this over here. Right. Move it to here. And so as I click around now, right, you'll see that, you know, you can add that extra layer of visual to the chart. Now obviously you'll want to make sure that it doesn't, for example, start to cut over the actual data itself. But you can create these sort of overlapping visuals with images and just with other visuals themselves. So for example, if I wanted to look at this by day of week, I could put another chart on here. Go ahead and move this down. There we go. Let's just try this. I'm going to add a chart here that shows day of week again. Day of week. And sorry, weekday name. And invoice count. We'll just say count of new vehicles. There we go. Turn it into a column chart. And again, you'll notice that because I have Toyota selected, it's highlighting the portion there by day. There we go. I'll move this. Right? So that's something else you can do. If you want to switch this to a line chart, which might be better in this scenario, I can just turn it into a line chart like that. And then again, you know, if I click on Honda, for example, I can kind of put a small little visual within the larger visual. It gives you an idea of the overall sense of the trend. Right, so it's very easy to do that. It's a question? The transparency, no. So it on this particular, oh, I see what you're getting at, yes. So you do see sort of the grid lines that are kind of faint underneath there or whatever. No, it's not yet. We can't do that. Yeah. Now you will notice though that we did try to make the grid lines fairly faint. We didn't want them to stand out in the visuals themselves, but we still wanted to give people a reference. You'll notice one thing here. You'll see the zero line. The zero line's a little bit darker, right? And so that's one of the things that we did in the visuals is so that people can kind of track the important anchor points, if you will, in the visual itself. All right? So that's that. I want to spend a little bit of time with tables and show you some of the capabilities that we have there. There's some interesting features that we have embedded in the product there. All right, so I'm going to create a new view. And what we're going to look at here is geography, region, and we're going to look at the make and the count of new vehicles. All right. Now, this is a table. And I want to look at this by the actual make. All right, so I'm going to put, actually, I'm going to switch this around. Put make here. Oh, sorry. Add to the existing visual. Make. And I'm going to turn this from a table into a matrix. All right. So now I get totals. Now there's a little interesting feature here that if you want your tables to automatically resize, you can just double click on that little spot right there that I just grabbed, right? This guy right here, right? And it'll resize. Now I'm gonna put the region on column groups. I just have to move it down there, right? There we go. So you see we have subtotals, automatically applied. You can turn them off if you want to. Totals at the bottom. You can sort by the totals, right? You can sort by the make, right? Pretty straightforward. Now, one of the things that you'll notice is if I come in here and I add date, this should do the trick. There we go. Now, if I add, for example, the ability to show items with no data, what will happen then is that, so what we do by default is if there's no rows or cells that qualify at the intersections, we remove those, right? But sometimes you want to have that consistency across all of the groups, right? So it's, imagine a scenario where you have salespeople that only work 3 months out of the year around the holiday season, let's say, and you have other sales folks that work the whole year, but you still want all of the sales people to have the full month stacking in the visual. So you can say show items with no data. There we go. Give it a minute. And so now you'll notice that everything got pushed down a little bit, right? And that's because it's filling in all of the blanks. And it's a little hard to see, I know, at this resolution. I'll collapse this down a little bit. And if I zoom in here, right, you'll see that, you know, the BMWs, the Audis, et cetera, didn't have anything that qualified under that particular date. So it's a nice capability that we have with tables. All right. Now, when I'm done with this, what I might want to do is actually prepare a presentation, right? So to do that, what I'm going to do is actually export this out to PowerPoint. I'm going to put this one here first. Actually, I'll move this one to the front. That's what I like. And then I'll go export to PowerPoint. So this report has unsaved changes. It's just a warning. It's okay. And then I'll say save and export. And let's see here. I'm going to name it Report 1. Come on. There it goes. So what it's doing now is it's going to go and capture every single one of those views as an image. All right, and it's telling me now that the export is complete, and then I can hit save. So what that did, that previous step, what that did is it actually saved the report, right? Saved the report up to the document library. And I'm going to go here to TechEd 2012, and I'm going to give this report, call it Cash for Clunkers, and hit save. There we go. And then now we can actually launch PowerPoint. Go to open, C, TechEd 2012. There it is. Hit open. Right? And if I wanted to add more slides in here, I could do that. It's just a normal PowerPoint presentation at this point. Excuse me. And then when I go to present, it's going to take a minute here to fire up. There it goes. And so those images that you saw during the save process, that's what you're seeing right here. So we actually embed those images into the RDLX file that we save, and then you have the images that get promoted into the PowerPoint. And if I say click to interact, second. First time it needs to warm up a little bit. All right. Collapse that down. There we go. All right. Give it a second. There we go. Whoa, went page next. Sorry. What's it doing there? All right, let me go back to presentation mode here. Hold on a second. Go back here. Try that again. There we go. It's popping me out here. There we go. All right. There we go. All right. So now here inside the PowerPoint, I have my entire presentation interactive, right? And I can still get all of the same functionality that I had before. Now, we don't give you the field list, right? So you can't go and change the actual fields. For those of you who are interested, there's actually a way that you can actually embed the entire editing experience into PowerPoint as well. I'm not gonna demo that during the presentation, but there's a blog entry out there you can find that'll show you how to do that if that's what you want to do. But again, you have all the full interactivity here, everything updates, and again, it's just designed to work. All right. So that is the Power View portion. All right. So how does Power View relate to the rest of the reporting services offering that we have? All right. So you're probably familiar with Report Builder and the Report Designer in the BI Development Studio. And the way to think about it is really around two different key scenarios. The first scenario is really about operational reporting, pixel-perfect type reporting. You're trying to build a very specific thing, right? Internally at Microsoft, we get these reports that are daily bug reports, for example. And they come to my email. I have an idea of how long a bug has been open. What do I need to do next? But the format of that is always the same. And it's actually important for it to be the same, right? And typically, those reports are built by developers. They can be embedded in applications, etc. And then on the second side here are reports that are built for PowerView. As you can see through the demo, it's just a very interactive type of experience that's designed to help people answer their questions. And then they can also go ahead and share those results. But it's not a pixel-perfect type of environment, right? You're not spending time setting up properties, configuring every little thing to make it look a certain way. It's all about getting your answers and then being able to share that. And it's really optimized and streamlined for people to actually interact with the data, right? Now, in terms of what you need to get PowerView working, PowerView runs in SharePoint. It's part of the reporting services add-in install. So when you install that piece, it'll show up in, it's part of that particular install shows up in SharePoint. And then to actually build the PowerView reports, you need one of two things. You either need a PowerPivot workbook that is sitting inside the PowerPivot gallery or just somewhere in SharePoint, but most people tend to put them in the PowerPivot gallery. Or you need a connection to a BI semantic model, right? And that is actually, it's an AS analysis services tabular model that is built that has the exact same sort of structure to it, but you can deploy those two analysis services and connect to them with PowerView as well, right? And in the future, you'll also be able to connect to your analysis services multidimensional projects as well, right? That's something that we announced will be coming. So that capability will be coming as well. So you can see here, just really quickly, you've got a PowerPivot system service that's running inside SharePoint. That's sort of responsible for launching the actual the model in memory in SharePoint, and that's what we're connecting to. And that's how we're able to actually produce the PowerView reports. All right. So now in the second part, we're going to look at some of the capabilities that are built into PowerPivot that made a lot of what you saw in that first part actually work, right? Now, in many cases, I recognize that the same person who's building the PowerPivot workbook might be the same person who's actually building the PowerView reports, right? But that may not always be the case. You might have people who are not familiar with PowerPivot or don't know how to write DAX expressions, et cetera. And for those folks, the PowerPivot author and the BI semantic model author are very, very important. They're going to actually create or be responsible for enabling this experience in the product. So we're going to look at how that works. So a few things. I'm going to demo these items. But you saw how the images showed up in the report by default when I clicked on an image. The other is a capability around the default field list. So you can create a table just by clicking on an entity, and PowerView will automatically put those together for you. We have a sort by capability, so you saw the day of weeks, how they got ordered. That was done and controlled via the model. You can define your number formats in the model so that end users don't have to spend time, putting a comma on things that have thousands or removing the zeros if something is just an integer. And then the relationships, building the trade-in relationship, the day of week, how it relates to the transaction table, et cetera, all of that is done inside the PowerPivot modeling experience. Now, how many of you have been in a presentation around DAX? Seen the question around DAX, okay. So I'm not gonna spend a ton of time on DAX, but I just want to show you that, included in PowerView by default, we have count, distinct count, sum, min and max, and averages, right? So these are the types of, if you don't do anything, you just upload your data, put it in the workbook, and then you put PowerView on top of it, these are the types of capabilities that you will get. In many cases, that's just fine. But once you bring in DAX, now you've got all sorts of new scenarios that open up. Addition and subtraction, ratios, time intelligence. So the running total net change that I showed you is done via time intelligence. We have a new rank function that allows you to do things like top end and just sort of rank your items. Inventory calculations, quantity on hand, those are the types of things you can do. More sophisticated things like standard deviations and variances. Text functions. In fact, a lot of the capabilities that I actually put into that Power Pivot model were just based on doing string manipulations, right? And you can do those via DAX. And lastly, and probably most importantly, is this notion of being able to define your own context. And what I mean by that is, as you're working with the data in PowerView, the context of the columns and row groups impact the actual values that you see there, right? So as you change the row groups and the column groups, you get different data, right? But with DAX, you can actually sort of escape that, right? And you can put your own context on a measure. And there's scenarios for where you would definitely want to do that, where you would not want the slicing of a particular value to impact the actual results that you're seeing on the page. Maybe you always want to compare it to an all number and have that included in your data. All right, so with that, I'm going to switch over to a demo and show you some of the things that I built into this model that enabled the experiences that we saw. So I'll move to 2 again. All right. So let's look at a few things here. All right, so this is the Power Pivot workbook that I've got. You'll see in here I've got, for example, transactions. All right. And you'll notice, if I remove all the filters, there we go. All right. And I'll zoom in down here. All right. Darn it. There we go. Go here. There we go. 678,000 records. That's what we were looking at and working with. And it's all sitting in Power Pivot here. All right. And like I said before, every single one of these records has both the has information about the invoice number, how much. Now, you notice these really small invoice amounts. Those numbers were actually, that was the amount of the check that you got from the government. It was either, from what I can tell, is one of two values, 3,500 or 4,500. But then it has things like, you know, the number of cylinders. And again, you know, when talking about DAX, here's a very simple example of using, you know, things like string concatenation, et cetera. If I zoom in here, oh, darn it. There we go. All right. So I'm just saying, hey, if I have some data, I was trying to clean up some of the values that were dirty in the data set. And I said, hey, if it came back as pound value, leave it blank. Otherwise, add the cylinders text to the actual representation. And then, you know, look, you have things like, I didn't clean up the odometer ratings, but you could tell that some people didn't really take that number very seriously. I don't know who drives a car that has 10 million practically miles on it. That's a little ridiculous. But, you know, I think some people just wanted to get the forms filled out. And then you have new vehicle MSRP, for example, it's over here. So all of this, again, is this sort of market basket scenario, right? And then if I switch over here to make, you'll notice that all I have in my make table is the make name and the make image. And I had a couple of additional fields that I'm hiding as I move the sample from server to server and I need to change the image URL. This is how I do that here. Again, this is just a text operation, right? It's just a replace. If I zoom in here, right, you can see that. Right, so I'm just changing the name of the server so the images will work. But you'll notice that everything else in this table, and there were a lot of fields that showed up in PowerView as a result, these are all DAX calculations. Right, so you can see here I've got a running total. Right, so this is some of the time intelligence capability. Right, you know, things like dates between, last date, those are all the sort of things that make those scenarios possible. You know, I just have a simple benefit from program ratio. This was the number that sort of calculates how many, to what extent the manufacturer benefited from the program versus their previous state before the program. I have a rank function right here, right, using rank X to actually rank how they fared in the market. Let's see here. Now, I mentioned relationships. So this is my model. I'm going to zoom this out a little bit here. Right? So I have transactions here, and it's linked to things like the trade-in make and the new vehicle make, and then I just have that make table again. And I actually have two relationships that are in the make table, right? And that is because to connect it back to the original table, I need to create two relationships to do that. And I actually, in some of the calculations that I have, I'm actually specifying we have this new capability where you can actually choose the relationship that you want to calculate the value along. So depending on whether I'm looking at the trade-in make or whether I'm looking at the new vehicle make, I can enforce that calculation to go through that relationship, the specific relationship that's there. Let me go back to the data view. Go to design. Go to advanced. Now, advanced, this advanced tab here, the way you enable this is right here, right? So right now it's already on advanced, so if I switch it, it'll go back to normal mode, but I'm going to leave it in advanced, and I'll show you a couple things here. Number one, make image. And you'll notice that I have this checkbox set right here to make it an image URL. I can also drop this down right here. And you'll notice that the row identifier is set to the make, so I don't have an ID in this case. I only have like, you know, 50 items, so it's relatively straightforward. I don't necessarily need an ID in this scenario. And the default label is what controls what happens when you create this card, right? And then it'll either get promoted to a small field, or it gets promoted to, let's see if I still have it open, this position right here. Right, so if you have a default label set, that's where that's going to go. I'll switch back here. All right, and then the default image. In this case, I have it set to the same make image, and I've done that throughout. All right. Now on the transactions table, I didn't walk through this in the actual PowerView demo, but you can actually set default field sets. Right, so if somebody just wants to really quickly start working with a table, you can check off a bunch of these fields, and when the user clicks on the entity itself, it'll just add all of those to the table automatically. I actually have this set on make. Right, I believe I have it set there. Yeah, so if I, for example, come back to PowerView, add a new view. Come on, there we go. All right, and if I just click on make, it's going to add those fields for me right out of the gate. I don't have to do anything, right? So these might be the fields that are the most important. These might be the fields that, you know, just are most commonly used, and you can mark those in the model, and they show up there. All right, so we've got about 12 minutes left. There was one other feature inside PowerView I wanted to demo for you that I neglected, so I'm going to jump back to there really quick. And it's called tiles, all right? And tiles are effectively a container that allow you to sort of flip through different values of a variable and see how it impacts the actual field. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take transactions, collapse this down, do invoice count, and I'm going to add the make again. Grab the make image, and I'm going to drag it to this field called tile by. Right? Now, the first one's blank because there's some blank data in here. Right? But the rest of them, as I sort of flip through here, right, I can see it's right now it's just updating a table that I have there, but I'm going to change that in a second. I'm going to change this to look at it by state. Click on the table, add state name. Just drag it down here, turn this into a column chart. There we go. Right? And so now I'm looking at so for example, American Motors. You could actually, people were trading in, American Motors. Now you'll see that there's only 11. The top number there on the axis is 11. But as I flip through here, look, somebody traded in an Aston Martin, right? so Audi. Now, notice as I'm flipping through here, there's a couple things happening. Number one is that this invoice count number is changing depending on the value that I have in the tile, right? And maybe that's what I want. But you'll also notice that the states are changing, right? So if I come back to American Motors or Aston Martin, I get a different set of states, right? And it's basically updating as I go through each of those tiles. So one of the things that you can do is you can actually change that, right? Maybe you want all of the states, just like we had this notion of showing items with no data on tables. Maybe what you want to do is actually have the same set of states across all of the tiles. So what I'll do is I'll go to Axis here in the ribbon, and then I'll specify to make the same across all tiles for the horizontal axis, right? And now as I go back to American Motors, you'll notice that all the states are there, right, that weren't there before. Now I can do the same thing with the y-axis. Go here, right? And I'll say I'm going to make that the same across all tiles. Now what you're going to see is this number is, these values are going to get really small, right? But as I start to flip through here, right, they'll get, some of them will get bigger as we get to the brands that have larger values, right? There you go, that's Ford. And I can actually sort this chart just like I sorted the other one. So for example, I'll click on invoice count. It's going to sort all of those. And so let's say I highlight something like California, right? As I flip through, I can kind of see how California does and as across all of the states. Now, in this case, California happens to be, you can see in the case of Buick, it was quite low, but the number stays highlighted as you move through the data, right? So that's another nice capability that we have. All right. Let me jump back over here to PowerPoint. All right. And I'm going to go check questions here in just a moment. All right. So in terms of key takeaways, PowerView, I hope you saw here, is a new reporting services offering that we're shipping with SQL Server 2012. It's designed to be very interactive. It's very focused around helping people query their data and get to the actual answers to their questions very, very quickly. And then you saw with the PowerPoint export how it allows you to go from static to interactive presentations very easily. And then lastly, what we looked at when we went to the part about, you know, kind of revealing how some of this capability works is that if you want to get the most out of PowerView in your organization, you're going to want to have folks that understand PowerPivot, the BI semantic model settings, and DAX, right? Now, obviously, not everybody has to know all of how to do that, but you need some folks within the organization that are proficient in those areas. And then lastly, I hope you saw that it's really kind of fun to just kind of play with the data in this environment. And that, a lot of that is because of just how flexible it is and how simple it is to sort of interact with the data there. Now, I've put some call to action and resources here. Some white papers that will help with learning DAX. There's a link to our blog. I have another sample database that I work with from time to time that shows flights, but I'll also put the one that I have from today's session up there as well. And if you don't have anything installed yet and you just want to get a feel for PowerView, we have a set of public-facing demos that you can actually just go and click on, and it'll launch right in your browser. You don't have to go through the process of installing SharePoint, et cetera. But if you just want to try it out, you can do that. And then lastly, if you have questions, you can go to, use Twitter. A lot of people who tweet about PowerView use the hashtag #PowerView. So now what I'm going to switch over here and see if there's any questions. And if they're not, I'll just take questions in the room. Let's see here. No. None there. None there. So there's a question around heat maps. So there are no heat maps yet in the product. So that's but definitely something that we're very aware of. Well, just to give me just a minute here. question around that. We had a question about iPad support. Did I not anticipate that one coming? So in terms of our mobile roadmap, up on our reporting services team blog, we actually have a whole post dedicated to the timeline associated with the release of different browser support as well as mobile device support. I believe at this time the dates around there we're targeting are the end of this calendar year, but you can go to the site and get the specifics around the details for that. Obviously, from our perspective, we want PowerView to be on every screen that people use, and we're committed to doing that, and we're going to make that happen. Let's see here if I have any more. None there. All right. Check real quickly here. Twitter search. Anybody grab me on Twitter? No? Okay, so now I'll take questions. Go ahead. Do we have a microphone on the...
Hello?
Go ahead.
You didn't actually look at the whole question about heat maps. I asked a more general question. Is there a way to integrate additional visualization types, either an API or a third-party provider or something like that?
Correct.
If, for instance...
Yes, correct. So currently there is no extensibility built into the product. Again, that is something that we're absolutely aware of and would definitely be on, somewhere on our roadmap. But again, around heat maps, both from the perspective of if you're thinking more of geographic heat maps, that's not there yet, as well as the more tree map type visualization. But those are all things that were, you know, very much on our radar, right? Go ahead. You can do that. I don't have an example here on that. Maybe I'll put one up on the blog when I do that. But I have seen there's some folks on our team who have actually built sort of what if type scenarios with the sliders. So you can do that.
And the what if variable with the slider will go into PowerPoint
as well. Yep. Absolutely. Yep.
So it's up on the blog already?
No, it's not yet. But I'll get it up there for you. Go ahead.
I just had a very simple, quick question. I was looking at the dates on your demo, and I was thinking about aggregating the days into weeks, like fiscal weeks.
Yep.
Would you do that by adding a measure?
So what you would do, the way you would do that is you would actually add a calculated column inside of the date table and create your fiscal weeks there.
Within
Power Pivot. Yeah. So it's just like how I did day of week, right? I basically asked for the day of week, and then I did a switch statement to say Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You can do the same type of thing to do fiscal year type calendars as well.
And is the data raw data, or is it like already like cubes or?
Well, either way. So one way you can do this, a lot of times what I do is if I've got a certain date range that I know about, I'll just build it in Excel because it's super easy. I just type the first date, drag it down, and then it sort of fills out, and then I build out the calculations and I'm done. But in that case, I actually had a set of dates that came back in the Access database. And I just copied and pasted them into Excel and removed the duplicates and then worked from there. But you can do both. You can create in PowerView, you can link to things that are actually in Excel tables directly, and that will work as well. What else? All right. Could you come to a mic that'll help?
Do you have any timeline on having analysis services in PowerView?
Right, okay. So. What we did announce is that capability is coming. It'll be coming with a CTP. We're not announcing specific dates around that yet. But rest assured, this is something that is very much on our radar. And just sort of keep your eyes peeled. It'll be a CTP. It'll come with a CTP. We announced that it won't actually come with one of the a next major release, if you will, right? It'll come before then. Okay. Question? Oh, I forgot to. So, all right, I neglected to show that piece. I'll jump over really quick. So we do have some limited support for changing colors in charts. I'll jump back up here. We have styles, right? And styles are sort of a catch-all change. Let's see here if it's going to update. Let me go up here. Let's try this one here. There we go. Let's try that again. All right, so there you go. So we have some limited support. We don't have full, like, you know, you pick the specific color and that's what you get. Again, that's something very much, you know, we're aware. We get that feedback a lot. But we did manage. This is actually a piece of functionality that we put in the product between, I believe, RC0 and RTM. So we did hear the feedback. We wanted to give users some different looks, and so that's what we enabled for RTM. So
can you create your own style?
Create your own? No, not yet. I just want to make sure. You feel free to come to the mic and ask questions. I put some links in here around related content. My contact information is here, the track resources. And again, we may have some of these left. It might be worthwhile to check out. We have a survey that we're asking folks to fill out around some of the professional reporting capabilities that we have in the product. So if you go down to the Tech Expo area, if you fill out one of these surveys, we'll give you a $10 gift card. So I'm not sure if there's any remaining. I'm one of the later sessions, but I think we just started doing it yesterday, so they might be available. And then lastly, please do also complete the evals and, you know, again, to get a chance to win something. But more importantly for us, it lets us know, you know, was the content useful and what can we do to improve it. So with that, I'll take a couple more questions as folks are coming. Prior slide? There you go. Oh, yes, you want to get the tag.
Question.
Go ahead.
The transaction table you were looking at had like 600,000 records.
Yep.
Is there any concern if we are opening this up to our users, if we have transaction tables that are in like the 10 million row level? Is there any issues with...
No, you know, at some point what you'll want to do, depending on how much data you have, is migrate that solution to an analysis services tabular model. And it's actually very straightforward to do that. You can actually go into Visual Studio. You can import from a Power Pivot workbook into that model. And it'll bring over all the calculations, any connections that you've defined, whatever. And if you want to start partitioning your data, you can do that there. But I have examples. The flight example that I use has like 6 or 7 million records in it in Power Pivot, and it's fine. It collapses down to about 300 meg. So I'm well within the range of room. So you probably have enough room in that scenario. Go ahead.
Is PowerView available in Office 365?
Is PowerView available in Office 365? No, it is not. Was it second half?
Yeah, will it be?
Will it be? Okay. So at this time, we're not disclosing any details around future capabilities and where you might see it. But again, you know, I stated before, we want to be where users are, right? Every screen, every device, every setting, we want PowerView to be there. So, you know, well, that's probably the best way to answer that question. Go ahead.
Great product.
All right. So, again, thank you. And if you have more questions, I'll hang out in the back. I'll also probably be downstairs a little bit today in the Tech Expo. But I know the next person, I got to clear the room for the next person to show up. All right, thank you.